On this week's 51%, we look at women in the arts, from women as the subjects of paintings.
And unfortunately, some of the same problems that these Gilded Age women ran into, women today still have.
To knitting as salvation, to filmmaking. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Pretending is all I do. I'm painting a town red. You had a heart that's blue.
During the Gilded Age, to be painted by John Singer Sargent was the thing to do. He captured high society in all its glitz and glam. But the stories behind the paintings are complex and even dark at times. A new book by a Virginia writer tells the stories of four women painted by John Singer Sargent. Allison Quance has more.
On the cover of Donna Lucy's new book, Elizabeth Chandler stares out, melancholy and tense.
She was one of the famous so-called Astor orphans.
Lucy tells the story of the grim boarding school on an island where Elizabeth was sent.
The guardians who were overseeing the orphans wouldn't permit her to come home, even though she was an Astor and had all the money in the world.
As a young child, Elizabeth suffered a hip disease.
Doctors strapped her to a board for 2 years. She had to just lie immobilized for 2 years. Thereafter, had a terrible limp.
By the time she limped into the London studio of John Singer Sargent, she was 27 years old. And Sargent, who painted hundreds of high society men and women of the Gilded Age, saw something special in Elizabeth.
And he immediately said, when he saw Elizabeth, that she looked like the Madonna with the eyes of the child, meaning Christ. So she had this saintly quality.
He made her portrait very quickly and later regretted it.
After he finished it, he said, "I'm sorry that I painted you so sad. I wish I could do it again and paint you happy."
Elizabeth Chandler is one of the four women chronicled by Lucy in her new book, Sargent's Women, Four Lives Behind the Canvas. There's also Elsie Palmer, daughter of the railroad tycoon who founded Colorado Springs.
Elsie grew up surrounded by adults, and her mother was very sickly, and so she made Elsie her confidant in a kind of cruel way. She would tell her that she was going to die and that she was going to have to take over the care of her two younger sisters, which led her at a very early age to be older than she really was.
At the ripe old age of 35, Elsie, now a nursemaid to her quadriplegic father, shocked the family. She announced she'd been carrying on a surreptitious correspondence with a much younger man in England.
And she announces she's getting married and she's leaving. And everyone is stunned.
And then there's Sally Fairchild, who was skipped over for a Sargent portrait in favor of her more beautiful sister. Instead, Sally stayed in the background and watched Sargent work. She decided she, too, would become an artist.
It was this incredibly crazy idea. But she had been so inspired by Sargent.
She married a painter, and they ran away to the Cornish Art Colony in New Hampshire.
Which is this fabulous bohemian place where artists of every stripe came, and everyone became models for everyone else's husbands, and then they all began to sleep with one another, and there was lots of drinking and carousing, and they put on these theatrical productions. It was a kind of Midsummer Night Dream set in New Hampshire.
Together, these three women, along with Isabella Stewart Gardner, paint their own picture of a time when fabulous wealth was unlocking new independence for some women.
This was a moment when women were taking stock of who they were, and these particular women who lived in this upper echelon of society, they had the money to do great things, like help start all of the great art institutions in the country. They were the great social leaders.
In the thousands of diary entries and letters that Lucy read as research, she also sees lessons for young women of today.
This is a book about young women. And unfortunately, some of the same problems that these Gilded Age women ran into, women today still have. They're up against a male-dominated society, and we're still fighting these same battles.
For the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, I'm Allison Quance.
Casey Snowden is always making something. She knits. She makes hats, scarves, even the occasional tank top. For her, knitting replaced an old and very dangerous habit. For WCAI's Creative Life series, Andy Short brings us the story from South Yarmouth, Massachusetts.
Shh. Listen. Casey Snowden's hands are sprinting. She passes a long strand of yarn between two needles. The effect is something like watching 10 tiny ballerinas. It's mesmerizing.
I am casting on, so that means I'm setting up my stitches. Yarn is a spun fiber. Like, I guess it can be acrylic, but I guess it's traditionally, it's been wool.
Casey and her mom are sitting in her mom's house, a little ranch in Yarmouth. The whole house is a museum to making things. Casey and Laurel take turns praising each other for the art that lines the walls.
I love it.
That's Casey's mom, Laurel, and she is definitely a mom.
I always love everything she does.
According to Casey, they've always had a good relationship.
It's always been pretty good.
I've
always been able to like be really open with my mom and like really honest with her about pretty much anything.
But good wasn't always easy.
High school is when I started partying, I guess you would say.
It didn't take long for her to realize she didn't drink like everybody else.
It was probably like the first time I blacked out. It was definitely the first time I blacked out. And I blacked out before the party even started, before anybody even got there. And I most likely had alcohol poisoning and was sick.
Casey moved out for college, got a job, and kept drinking. Now and then she would pick up the occasional paintbrush or bit of thread, but there was no discipline to her work. It took about 2 months for her to realize drinking didn't play well with art making or college, so she left. Casey's life became a seesaw of work and party. At 20, she realized she needed to stop.
I knew that I had to. I was like kind of scared of myself from drinking at that point. My mom was one of the first people that like helped me in that way.
I mean, I had offered to take her someplace.
Casey moved back home. Her mom got her into a 12-step program. Laurel taught Casey how to knit, and they started making things together.
I'm a very basic knitter. But it was just, you know, knit and purl.
They would sit together for hours, just the two of them, knitting.
Different size yarn requires different size needles. So,
it's not
the right size.
Between her mom, sobriety, and knitting, Casey was able to start untangling her life. She hasn't had a drink in 7 years. And that untangling, it's still happening to this day. Literally.
And you know what? I wasn't having the best week. And then I went to my yarn pile and started untangling all the yarn. I was like, I've been putting this off for a few months, and I'm going to untangle all the yarn.
I think it's very therapeutic when you untangle.
A year ago, she started a business. She sells her wares online. For Casey, this whole venture isn't just a way to cash in. It fulfills another need.
Also, by making things for people, I feel like I'm connecting. You know what I mean? When I told you that I see someone wearing my stuff, I feel like I'm connected to that person in a way. That's why people create in general, is to connect with others so that other people don't feel so alone. Mom, I think I want thicker yarn than this.
Back in the living room, Casey is showing her mom how to knit in the round. This involves a 5-needle Hydra. Each needle is wrapped in its own sleeve of yarn. It is elaborate, and there is lots of room for error.
Mom, look, you're doing it.
Yeah, I know, but it's really confusing.
Would you say she has surpassed you?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine. It's great. I love it.
So just forget that needle even exists. The other one. You got it, yeah. You just got to bring this yarn back over here.
See?
It's okay, Mom. I'll fix it.
For WCAI's Creative Life, I'm Andy Short in South Yarmouth.
Artist Alexa Lim Haas talks about her newest animated short film, Agua Viva. The film was among the 24 projects selected for a special one-night screening at the 2017 Borscht Film Festival in Miami. Kathy Bird from Fresh Art International brings us the story.
Today you'll meet Filipino-American artist Alexa Lim Haas. When she was growing up, Japanese animation inspired her to make comic books. She produced her first film at age 11. 5 years after graduating from New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, she premiered Glove, her first animated short, at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival. We connect on Skype to talk about her latest project, Agua Viva. The animated short was among the 24 projects selected for a special one-night screening at the 2017 Borscht Film Festival in Miami, Florida. Borscht commissions and showcases films by emerging artists that tell stories about Miami. A new commission brought Agua Viva to the screen.
I would say your project, Alexa, was a favorite of tons of people in the room.
The reception was surprising for me because I know you remember there was a little note in the beginning that said the film wasn't done. So I was really nervous about playing it because I'd also just been so in the movie working frame by frame until just the week before Borscht. So I couldn't really even see the movie anymore at that point. It was really an overwhelming experience for me.
You know what? I think that apology really brought people's hearts into the experience of watching.
I was actually scrambling for the 3 months leading up to the festival trying to get this movie to a good place so that it could play. Yeah, that's what all my energy was for, to play somehow. And I was actually really surprised that they ended up playing it on the big screen that night.
So you were a new Borscht grantee.
Honestly, the big push for me to apply, I saw that they announced this No Bro Zone grant, which is judged by a female panel, and there's just no boy say in it at all. I was really motivated. My own voice is maybe a very feminine one. I've had people say that my work is unrelatable or that it's not feminist enough. And I realized in the last year that I just didn't have enough women looking at my work.
That's really amazing. I love that No Bro Zone idea of enabling women to express themselves in the field. What is the story that you're telling?
So Agua Viva is about a manicurist in Miami who doesn't speak English very well. And she's trying to articulate her inner feelings and observations that she has throughout the day in the little bit of English she knows.
You've told me your motivation for representing this particular character is related to your own struggle with language.
Yes, most definitely. I feel like every movie I've made, actually, it's sort of an undercurrent of it. And this was the first time that I was making a movie specifically about it. Maybe because I grew up in a Filipino household, or also because I had a lot of trouble reading growing up. Even though English is my first language and only fluent language, I feel like I can't wield it as strongly as I would like to. I've always had trouble condensing all of my thoughts into words, really. And so there's even a line in Agua Viva where she says, "My thoughts are so fluid, but words are so solid." The thought to word has always been like, I've never been able to quite put my finger on exactly how I feel.
I don't talk to anyone. I like to keep on the fence so we don't have to talk.
The context in which this drama with this young woman occurs is a manicure salon.
It's kind of funny because before, when I was telling people about the movie, before I had started animating it, I would say to them that this was a movie more about the orange on the table than it is about all the people coming into a manicure salon. It is composed of a lot of close-ups, mostly of hands, sometimes feet, just the body parts, basically, that are being worked on. And throughout the first 75% of the film, I would say you hardly even see Mei Mei, the main character. but you hear her voice and you're just looking at the things that she's looking at, like, for example, the microwave spinning or the TV playing or the fan blowing.
What is the meaning of the title of this film?
Agua Viva means jellyfish in Portuguese. I've always loved that phrase or that word. I really like the direct translation of it, where when you break down the words, it's living water. I chose it for this movie to represent the fluidity of her thoughts, as opposed to the solidity of her words.
What surprised you the most about the success of Agua Viva?
I never knew how it would connect to other people. And I think that was really the surprise of Borscht for me, was just seeing how many people had very strong emotional responses to it, particularly females. My favorite part of the whole experience was the conversations that I had with other women after showing the movie.
Today is my birthday. This year, on a Tuesday. When I remember all the nights by the river, I wonder how I ended up here so far away. My hair is so long now. How many hours of the day do I try to make the body happy? My body lazy. It would sleep and eat only if I let it, if it could. This is the oldest I have ever looked. Am I the same person?
This is Fresh Art International. I'm Kathy Bird. You've been listening to my conversation with Filipino-American artist Alexa Lim Haas. We're talking about Agua Viva, her newest animated short film. Women jurors commissioned the work through the Borscht Film Festival's new No Bro Zone grant. That's a grant opportunity for women only. Agua Viva celebrates the female perspective within a filmmaking ecosystem where men have traditionally determined which movies make it to the big screen.
To learn more, visit freshartinternational.com. I have wanted to try one of those painting classes, often referred to as a paint and sip or a variation thereof, which has gained in popularity in recent years. It's not that I wanted to tap into my inner artist if she's not beyond recall. It's that I was curious about why these classes are popular mainly with women. I found myself headed for a county fair in my neck of the woods one day in late summer in the Hudson Valley region of New York, and noticed that for the first time, the Dutchess County Fair was holding paint and sip classes. There were two classes a day for 4 days of the fair. Here was my chance. It's amazing what memories surface when triggers present themselves. En route to the Arts and Crafts building, I was transported back to middle school, to art class, papier-mâché. I could see the classroom, the way the tables were arranged, the way I wanted to produce something close to a masterpiece, but just producing something at all ended up the goal. Then I started recalling my love of coloring books and the struggle with inside versus outside the lines, drawing what wasn't already outlined in black. My large portrait of a woman in lace and macaroni disrupted the coloring book memories, and disrupting all of my art memories was the booming voice of an educator, enthusiastic about sharing his knowledge of frogs and salamanders. This turned my focus to the present and to the class I was about to take. Each class would be asked to paint a rural, fair-like agricultural image. Please, please, please let it be the barn with sunflowers, please, or the sunset with barn silhouette. Yes, the barn genre. I'd like that. Okay, we're doing a piglet. I was first to arrive. I looked at the already painted piglet, the one we were supposed to emulate, and thought, wow, I'm out of my league. No, I was going to do this. I wanted to do this. A blank canvas? Who wouldn't want that? Casey Swift led the class. She offered guided art instruction step by step. We were to follow her lead, though were encouraged to make the piglet our own. About halfway through the class, Maddie Sartori, a fourth grader now, experienced painting the piglet differently than I.
It's really fun and easy.
I will agree with the fun part. Maddie said she wanted her pig to be really cute. I thought I too would head in that direction, but did not. We'll get to that later. Meanwhile, Sartori tells why she's in the class.
Because it's really fun to do.
Have you done it before?
Yeah.
She says she has taken such a class about 4 times. Her sister and mother also took the class at the fair. I was sitting next to City of Poughkeepsie resident Stephanie Walker.
Why did you sign up for this class?
Just impulse.
You were just walking by?
Yeah. Just looked like fun.
And is it?
It's a little scary because I already made a mistake with my ear, but there's no pressure.
Walker was with Bill Hughes, who was not participating.
Why aren't you painting?
Because I just sat down to watch her paint.
Why wouldn't you paint?
No, she was already started, and I caught up with her. And so I just wanted to watch her. I didn't have an interest in it, really.
Yeah. You wouldn't consider it if the timing were a bit different?
Nah, probably not. It doesn't have an appeal to me.
Hughes, a photographer, wandered over to the photography exhibit shortly after we spoke, and I spoke with Casey Swift of Millerton, the instructor, just before the class began.
Have the classes been predominantly women?
Yes, they have. I had one gentleman so far, but predominantly women.
Is that the case in general for Kate's class?
It is. Sometimes I get a shower where it's a Jack and Jill type shower, or I do a couples night geared just toward couples, but mostly I have women.
And why do you think that is?
I think women are more, less intimidated by coming out and painting together. And I think it's a good way for women to get out and socialize with each other.
I was going to say, what do you see? Do you see any bonding? If they haven't come as already friends or family and with new people, do you see it as a social event?
I do. And I have some women who come singly who continue to come. And I think they make friends each time. And they enjoy their time alone and don't mind coming alone. And it's just a little outlet for them. And some women have never painted before and continue to do it. And some women have painted before and don't have the time. So this forces them to make time for something they've loved before.
And how has it been different here at the fair versus at your home or other people's homes or restaurants?
Totally different here because we have an audience. I didn't even think about that, but as soon as we start painting, as you'll see, people stop and they watch the entire time and they're enthralled by what everyone's doing, which is awesome.
Is it more intimidating for the participants?
It is a little bit intimidating, but a lot of these people are first-timers, so I think if they can get through this, they'll be back again, and without an audience, they'll do great, but yeah.
I just wanted to go back to the gender issue. Is it something that you'd like to see more men, or, you know, whoever shows up, shows up?
I'm happy with the women doing it, and I think I don't know why it's intimidating for men. I would love to do a men-only class sometime and see what would happen if I could get all men, a group of guys to come. I don't know, maybe I would do a Harley Davidson theme someday and get a group of big tough guys to come out. You know, I don't know if it's the themes I'm offering that are not up their alley, or I don't know what it is.
About having an audience, she wasn't kidding. Well, before my piglet was ready for prime time, a couple passed behind me. The woman, clearly eyeing my creation, said in what I perceived as a puzzled and somewhat disapproving tone, "Doesn't that look like a..." I immediately turned to Stephanie and began talking to block how the passerby finished her sentence. She was not going to say piglet, I assure you. Hey, this is a judgment-free zone. The thing is, I loved the class. My piglet certainly had some unintended Picasso-like qualities from the get-go, but I went with it, and went with it, and went with it. I probably would have stayed there for another hour if the class hadn't ended. I couldn't stop playing with it. More gray there. No, make the head smaller. Add whiskers. Ah, the perfectionist at a canvas, and the fair ended that Sunday. Let it go. Isn't it funny? The push and pull I felt in coloring books decades ago was no different here. And I started to understand the camaraderie, at least there, in that class on that day, of women. All I know is I have thought about painting the piglet a lot. I've told my friends and family all about it. I want to paint something again. I did something that about 10 minutes into the class, honestly, I thought I wouldn't be able to do. It was empowering and fun and difficult, a lasting combination, and I don't care who comes to classes. Or would I? And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1470.